3. Father Peter Wilson's Office, Goldmark Street, City of Telesburg, Kingdom of Old Caras. Father Peter Wilson stared sightlessly out his office windows. The Telesburg sun was bright, shining down on the broad street beyond the deep green shade of the trees, growing around the ex-exchequer building in which that office was housed. It was late morning, and as always, Telesburg was a bustling stir of energy. Wilson's office was far enough from the harbor and the warehouse district which served it for the local traffic to be relatively free of the heavy freight wagons, which spent so much time rumbling through much of the rest of the city. This was primarily a financial district, home to bankers and law masters, stock traders and counting houses. And aside from the regularly scheduled lizard-drawn trolleys, most of the traffic here consisted of pedestrians, interspersed with only an occasional carriage or horseman. A few sidewalk vendors were spotted about, their carts and small wagons shaded by colorful awnings. Most of them were food sellers, serving the office workers employed in the vicinity. And an occasional tantalizing wisp of aroma drifted through his open windows. Wilson didn't notice, not any more than he noticed the contrast between brilliant sunlight and dark shade, or that he heard the vendors' raised voices, or actually saw the passing pedestrians. No, his attention was elsewhere, focused on the remembered words of the letter which lay folded on the desk before him. So it's finally happened. He felt a fresh burning sensation at the backs of his blue eyes. After all these years. He didn't know how the letter had reached him. Oh, he was sure he could have tracked it back through at least the last two or three sets of hands, but after that it would have disappeared untraceably into the anonymity its sender had required, and he was glad it was so. He leaned his head against the tall back of his chair, closing his eyes, and remembered every step of the journey which had carried him to this office on this street. He remembered his own realization that he had a true vocation as a priest. He remembered choosing to follow his father into the Order of Schuler, because that was what Wilson's did, and because he shared his father's commitment to reforming what that order had become. And he remembered the day his father had urged him to take the position as Archbishop Eric Dinis's intendant. "Clinton's becoming obsessed with the Carisians," his father had told him somberly, a vicar speaking to a young priest he trusted, as much as a father speaking to a son. "They desperately need an honest intendant, someone who'll apply the prescriptions honestly and not pander to Clinton's paranoia." And frankly, the father had come to the fore. "I want you out of Zion. I don't like the direction things are heading, and you've already made yourself just a bit too visible for my peace of mind." Peter had felt his eyebrows rising, and his father had snorted harshly. "Oh, I know, the pot and the kettle and all that. But at least I'm a senior vicar, not a mere upper priest. Besides..." He'd started to say something else, then stopped and simply shaken his head. But Peter had understood what his father hadn't said as well. If Samuel Wilson didn't like the direction things were heading, then at least part of the reason he wanted Peter in Telesburg was to get him as close to out of Jaspar Clinton's reach as was physically possible. In the long run, it probably wouldn't make any difference. When it came down to it, no place on Safehold was truly beyond Clinton's reach, for the Grand Inquisitor's reach was that of Mother Church herself. But Peter had understood the logic, and however little he'd liked the thought of deserting his father and the rest of Samuel Wilson's circle of reformers, he'd realized his father was also right about the Carisians' need for an honest intendant. And honest intendants, unfortunately, were an ever scarcer commodity. And so he'd taken his father's advice and accepted the post. In the years since, he'd been glad he had, He'd understood exactly why Carizians would have alarmed and infuriated someone like Clinton. Yet the better he'd come to know them, the more groundless he'd realized Clinton's fears were. Perhaps Carizians were more innovative than they ought to be, but there was no taint of the dark among them. He was certain of that. And none of the innovations he'd been called upon to evaluate had even approached an actual violation of the prescriptions. But Clinton had been unprepared to accept that conclusion, not because he had any concrete evidence to the contrary, but because any hint of unorthodoxy among the citizens of Caris was an offense against his own power as God's enforcer. Worse, it potentially threatened the Inquisition's cozy little empire. Even so, Pater had been unprepared for the sudden eruption of outright warfare between the Kingdom of Caris and the Knights of the Temple Lands. The abrupt escalation had taken him as much by surprise as anyone else, and he'd found himself forced to choose between his vows of obedience to the Grand Inquisitor, who headed the Order of Schuler, and his vows of obedience to God. In the end, it had been no contest. He couldn't pretend he'd been comfortable, that he was truly comfortable even now, for that matter, with his current position. He'd agreed to serve Michael Stainer as his intendant, yet he hadn't expected to end up running the new royal and then imperial patent office. He was no longer simply making certain new innovations didn't violate the prescriptions. Oh, no. Now he was involved in actively encouraging innovations, as long as they didn't violate the prescriptions.